Welcome to This Business of Music and Poetry podcast, where the life of a creative meets the real world. I'm Michael Amade, host World Poetry Open Mic, The Michael Amade Show, author of more books than I should mention, musician, poet, and above all, creative entrepreneur. My collaborator and conspirator in this project is Clifford Brooks, founder of the Southern Collective Experience, host of Dante's Old South on NPR, poet and author of The Draw of Broken Eyes and Whirling Metaphysics, Exiles of Eden, and Athena Departs, The Gospel of a Man Apart. Our guest today is musician Debbie Hennessy. Debbie was named AC40 Female Artist of the Year by New Music Weekly, as well as charting a top 20 hit on NMW's AC40 charts. Her songs and music videos have aired on USA and UHD networks and TV shows Extra, The Next GAC Star, and The Moment. She's been named a multiple finalist in the Great American Song Contest and multi-semifinalist in the Song of the Year contest, as well as multiple honorable mentions from the Billboard World Song Contest and the West Coast Songwriters Contest. Her songs have been included on compilation CDs including CMT's New Music Collection, Go Girls Music Fest, Songs Alive, Beautiful Women on the Move, among others, and named Best Vocalist of the Month by Singer Universe. Debbie is a writer of Studio 51 Music, Pacifica Music, and others, providing original songs for their film and TV music libraries. There's a lot of great nuggets about living a creative life in this episode, and I think you're going to find so much value in it. But first, let's start with her latest single called True Me.
A one-way road, no lights to see where to go. I have to make it alone. Out of this pain, I thought I saw the sunrise on the horizon, but night catches me.
Debbie, it is fantastic to have you on the show, man. How are you doing?
Good. I'm really happy to be here. I've been hoping to be on it, and now I'm really excited to finally be here. So thank you.
Oh, no, it's absolutely our honor and pleasure to do so. And when I was thinking earlier today, kind of prepping myself for this interview, I had the I questioned myself, like, where did I meet? Because it was one of those things where it's like, you know, if you told me we met in eighth grade, I would have believed you. because it's an idea and a theme that's kind of gone through these shows, that when people that work towards the same ends for the right reasons, it seems like you've known each other forever. You feel like that's on point?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, I think that translates to what we create as well, with me and poetry and Amade and music, and you're in music and as well. How did the muse of music find you? What age and what scenario? Lay that out for us.
Okay. Well, first of all, I think we actually met like on MySpace.
So yes.
Yeah. So we go way back. Yeah, it was before the first book of poetry. So yeah. You know what? I don't remember a time I didn't want to do this. So I was just one of those kids that was very annoying to my parents and would sing along with the radio and that kind of stuff. I wasn't necessarily out there like doing it, but I, you know, even from a young age was singing to anything I heard on radio, or if there was a TV show that had music, I was there. You know, it was such a draw to me, such a magnet for me. And, but eventually, you know, I think the first show I ever did, I was like 12 or 13 or something like that, you know? So, and then from then on, it just kind of, I never stopped. But, I think you have there's an entire world encapsulated in 3 minutes. And I'm really big on, you know, songs that are really hooky and lots of guitars and harmonies and things like that. So I was just always drawn to a lot of things, but I also was drawn to a wide range of things because I'm just old enough that we had, you know, AM radio where they played everything. So, you know, you'd have a Johnny Cash song, and then you'd have a Barbara Streisand song, and then you'd have, you know, some rock band or what. It was just everything. And I think it was one of the best ways to grow up having such a variety of music to listen to.
Now, you mentioned Linda Ronstadt and Johnny Cash, which are both awesome. But to follow that thread, who else are your like major players in your pantheon of music?
Well, I think that, you know, it was funny that it was what I was going to say was the very first record that I had access to was I was like 7 and I had access to Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison or something like that.
Nice.
Because that's what my mother had. But, you know, like I said, I think when it first started out, it was across the board because of pop radio and AM radio. You know, everything. I love Motown. I've always loved Motown. I was lucky enough to spend some time in a couple of Motown cover vans in my 20s when I lived in San Francisco, and we just had a blast. But, you know, once I got to be a teenager and stuff, it was all about rock and roll. So that was, of course, the big thing. And, you know, I think I was around, well, I don't want to say ages. And then I found, like, Steve Perry, and I found, like, a bunch of other people that I really liked. And I always looked for a couple of things. One, it was very difficult to find other women who were doing it at that level that you could actually, you know, put an album out. So especially in the rock genre. So if I came across somebody who was a woman doing it, I probably would buy the album before I would even hear it. But you know, I think that radio informed it a lot, and then just records. You know, the Eagles. Oh my God, the Eagles were huge. You know, I'm trying to think of the albums that I played till almost the grooves wore out, which would be the Eagles and Bob Seger and Elton John and Alice Cooper and just, you know, on and on and on. There were like just a wide variety. And then I still liked things in the more pop world as well, or things that were R&B or soul, that kind of stuff. So it's a really wide range.
What genre of music would you consider? Because when I hear you, I clearly can taste the country western vibe of it. But when you talk about your influences, I can feel the rock and roll and the energy there of a full live show. I mean, where what category would you feel like you best fit?
Yeah, it's always been hard for me because, you know, I sort of ended up in country because there wasn't really a fit for me in rock and roll. It was one of those things where, you know, as a female singer, you kind of got pushed one way or the other. And I sort of found my footing in that. And but in all honesty, I'm more of a, some people say I do like country gospel almost, or like country soul, that kind of thing. But I, you know, when I describe it, it's like sort of country rock and blues. That's what I do.
That's perfect. Country rock and blues. That's it. That's, I love that.
Yeah, definitely. So that's kind of where it fits and it falls. And, you know, it definitely lets me encompass all the different things that I really want to do.
When you look at the landscape of music today, and this is, I mean, as far as like from a business standpoint, when I hear you say, and of course it's not alien to me to have heard this about how women have struggled so much harder to get ahead and really thrive in the rock and roll industry. You know, it's either you kind of push towards pop and cute or country and soldier. Do you feel like today it's any better than say like 20 years ago, 30 years ago?
You know, it's interesting. I never let it hold me back or worried about it or really paid much attention to it, even though I had to fight harder. I felt like I had to be more professional than any of the guys, especially in my attitude and in my, you know, the way I presented myself and things like that, because otherwise, you know, they were just like, oh, chick singer, blah, 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 whatever. So I really, you know, that was the one area where I really noticed myself really focusing very hard. And then I think that unfortunately, even with as many women as you can look back on and see in the industry, particularly in country right now, it is almost impossible to get on the radio. And there was some big country radio dude a few years back who was spouting off about, you know, he didn't want any women on the radio. And unfortunately, it wasn't like he was saying anything new. He was actually stating a fact. If you listen to modern country radio, there's very few women. And if they are, there's like a very certain set of women, and they definitely have a very certain look and a certain sound and, you know, that kind of thing. It's very frustrating. And the older you get, the harder it gets. And I think, you know, I learned a long time ago, once I was able to make my own music and I did not need a record company, I did not need somebody to do it for me or to help me, I just did what I wanted to do. And if people like it, great. But I can't worry about, you know, trying to fit into some impossible mold that the industry wants, whatever genre that may be. And I don't think anybody should, but it's very, very hard in, you know, pop music and in country. And I mean, I can't even name any new female rock singers. You know what I mean? It's like, when was the last time it happened? So, yeah, it's tough.
Well, again, Debbie, you're making this so easy. because the next one I want to get to is, you know, to tie in when you said, you know, I went out and did it myself. If you don't mind, again, I'm not asking for the deep trade secrets, and I'm being serious about that, but we typically wait to the end of the show to say, like, hey, do you have any advice for those coming up to try to, you know, they're trying to do what you're doing? But I'd love to ask you that now and tie into kind of how did you take the reins and control of your sound and your music and your songs?
Well, first I'd say, don't follow me. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. But no. You know, it was interesting. I started doing it myself about 20 years ago when you really could actually create a record and it was affordable. And so at first I wasn't a very prolific writer, and I'm still not, but at first I did not have very many of my own songs. So I just gravitated to, and always have, to really great songwriters. I was the kid who knew who wrote what song and who produced it and blah, blah, blah. So for the first album in particular, it actually kicked off because someone asked me to sing a demo for them. And I did that, and I went in, the producer loved my voice. And so we started working together, and it turned into an album. And then from there, at that time, I just kind of mimicked what I saw and what was available as far as how major releases happen. Well, you know, there has to be a certain quality. They have to be, you know, there has to be certain things and how they promote it and da-da-da-da. And I just scaled it down for myself. And I was very lucky because I had spent about 10 years working as a editor for a magazine. So I had a whole skill set of being able to create promotional materials, understanding, you know, what the photographs should look like and how they work in print and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, and it's just naturally evolved from there. You know, we, the second record, I was like, okay, got to do a video. So then, you know, I had an idea for a video. I found the right people. And I use a lot of the same people over the years. I'm actually at a point right now where I'm starting to use some new, really new people. But, you know, I just find the people that, you know, like you said earlier, we find the people that we kind of are on the same frequency with and work together. And it's more important to me to work with people that I respect and care about than to just work with anybody because it might get me somewhere. I do not care about that. And it, especially living in a place like LA, that can be a very tempting path to follow. And I know that a lot of, you know, pop singers and stuff, that's maybe their path, or pop writers. But I think anybody who wants to do this lifelong, which should be your goal, is to find out who you are. And it may not come to you overnight. I don't think I found the country stuff until I was in my 20s and was doing some of the Motown stuff. And you know what I mean? So it's very interesting. I think you need to listen to yourself and see what you gravitate towards. And like I said, find people that you really enjoy working with.
That's when everything, it's like checking off boxes, you know, in this interview with you. I mean, it's when, you know, with the good thing, I mean, it's people think that when we say things like, you know, you really need to be patient in finding your voice, and you should really find out who these people are before you get into cahoots. Where did I pull that word from? before you get in cahoots and create art. I mean, you know, it sounds like you're, you know, people say, oh, well, you're I've been told that you sound so hippie, but there's a reason that these maxims and quotation fingers here, cliches, have been around, because they're true. And when you try to force yourself into a box, especially out there in LA, like, you know, we've talked before where you've seen people say, like, this is working and those people are cool, so let me go jump in with them. I have found that no matter what art you're in, when you do that, more times than not, you get far more taken than you're given by these people.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I may be overly cautious in some ways. I'm more of a waiter than a jumper, but I and, you know, maybe I missed some things that I could have done, but I also know that I did it myself, and I own my stuff, if you will. Like, I own what I have created, and I am in control of what I created, and I get to say where it goes and who uses it, and I like that. I don't want it to be misused or mistreated. It took me a long time to create it, so like any art form, despite the fact that people don't seem to value music very much anymore and think it should all be free, it's not free to make it, and we put our hearts and souls into it. So I like to have some say. There's so many horror stories of people who signed away their lives, and it's just horrible. It's horrible.
I agree. I mean, to me, it's like I always call it the Beatles conundrum, where, you know, the Beatles they lost control of their music. And then in the 80s, I can clearly remember watching the Nike commercial that came on when Michael Jackson had bought the rights to all the Beatles song playlist and played Revolution for a Nike ad. And I'm not trying to be the anti-business guy, but as the creator of a song that will probably outlive all of us, that it was sold to sell a tennis shoe.
Yeah, and I get that. And the thing is, things have done a complete, 180 now. Now, the only place a writer artist can make any money is in commercials. So now we're all trying to get there. It's very strange how everything has changed. But yeah, I think back in those days, I think this is, in all reality, this is what has hurt musicians and the music industry so much, is the fantasy of what music is and what the music life is and what it takes to create it and what it takes to make it. And that has destroyed the value of music more than anything, because it was pretty much a facade. And I think that's why you hear these particular horror stories. But I mean, I'm not too precious about my music. It's nothing like that. I do it for myself and because it's who I am and I can't not do it, but it's there for people to enjoy. But when it comes to the commerce side, that's a whole nother situation, because it is so difficult to make a living as a singer or songwriter or musician.
I will plead ignorance to the vocation of music. It's the reason that I write poetry, but you nailed it. And again, you hit the nail on the head with me when I've often said that you have two kinds of writers. You have those that want to be called writers, and then you have those who do it because that's what they were born to do.
Right.
And it seems like that's what you're saying about musicians. When you look back on those who have made it big, I mean, legends that all names that all of us ring true. Do you feel professionally that in their time it was better? Because I know that we kind of hear, like, I'm thinking, Walk the Line about Johnny Cash and his life, but did you think that the life to be a musician was easier, say, 10 years ago than it is now, to actually to make that your lifestyle, that that's the breadwinner is your music and your songwriting?
I actually don't. I don't think it's ever been easy, because I think that, excuse me, having a little thing with my throat today. I think that a lot of musicians, unfortunately, don't understand how they are paid. And that's why so many of them lost so much. When you look at a lot of the early African-American writers who, wrote songs that went on to be hits by white artists and whatever, they signed away, their lives and deals and without realizing that all the money actually comes from publishing. So there's really, especially now, really, when was the last time you bought a record or a CD? I mean, I know we probably buy them a lot, but the general public, it's a little harder. I don't think it's ever been easy. I just think that some people are better at figuring it out. Like a lot of like hired guns, like those guys, they're amazing. Like a lot of the guys that I use and gals that I use in my bands and stuff like that, because they're very multidimensional. They can play different instruments, they can sing, they can tour, they can teach, they can do a lot of different things. And I think those guys do really well. As what I've seen lately, which, didn't happen before, was studio producers who are maybe not huge, but instrumentalists who can write and record and get a good sound. Those guys do really well, too. I think it depends on why you're in it. And I also think, but I do think the biggest problem has been the misconception of how are we paid. And that's part of why I became very active with Songwriters of North America. And, just last year, we and some other groups managed to get the Music Modernization Act. And it's the first actual change in music and copyright law in over 30 years. And so if you think what's happened over the last 30 years, how we went, I mean, we were using cassettes and then we were using, you know, Walkmans. And, you know, so, I mean, there's been the technology and such has been so incredibly fast. And yet how a writer gets paid or how a singer or a musician or artist gets paid has never changed. It's gotten smaller. That's been the problem.
Amadeus, you want to take over?
Well, sure. I mean, I'm just listening here. First of all, you know, and just kind of taking in what your experience is. There's a, you know, we have obviously a bunch of overlap, Debbie, in the stuff that we've worked on. But I also have the kind of interesting background of having been in a pretty successful Western group, and then leaving that and actually running a country radio station. So there's some things I'm sure we can talk about, you know, as far as from our various perspectives on that. But of course, I think in LA, especially, talk about a very competitive landscape, right? And it is such an industry town that whatever you're doing, everybody kind of has their elbows out, don't they?
It's interesting. I actually find Nashville to be more difficult.
Oh, I believe that. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't lived there, but I've been there, and I've used, you know, songs from people there, and I have many friends who are there. But it was interesting, because when I went there after my second album, I was kind of trying to decide, do I stay in L.A.? Do I move to Nashville? What am I going to do? And I found that at that time, I had more freedom living in Los Angeles than I would if I went there. They have a little bit more of a structure there as to how things are done.
Oh, they're very structured in Nashville, aren't they? Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I'm trying to be polite.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's nobody there wants to say no. And you can get a meeting with everyone and they're the nicest people in the world, but they also don't tell you yes unless they have seen you around town for like 10 years. Whereas LA, you can't really get a meeting with very many people. And it's very difficult and very spread out. And then you have the movie industry, which is a whole nother kettle of fish. So, but I have to say, the music scene in LA has gotten better. I mean, not if you want to play a club in LA, you're still going to be screwed. But as far as diversity goes,
right,
it's really cool. I mean, I'm impressed by the diversity that we really do have in this town.
You know, I was surprised. I ran into a guy. I was at an award show a couple of years ago. The group I was with was up for Western Artists of the Year. Mm-hmm. And a guy from Los Angeles, a Western country singer named Ron Christopher, I don't know if you've heard of him, won Western Album of the Year. Oh. And, you know, so cool. So I've connected with him. And, you know, but it's really interesting to find good cowboy music coming out of Los Angeles.
But
of course it's there, right? I mean, I think the thing that people don't realize now, maybe from the outside of the industry, is just how much music is out there, but also just how much good music is actually out there. Well, I was going to say, when I hear people talking about how horrible the music industry is now and how no one has any talent, the first thing I think of is, oh, you just don't know where to look. Because it's not that everything's amazing. Obviously, it's not, right? You're always going to have the top 2 or 3% best quality, you know, show up somewhere. But there's amazing records from people who have 600 views on YouTube. You know what I mean? I mean, amazing work.
Yeah.
And so I think right now the question is so much about how do you get heard? How do you get in front of those people?
That's the thing. Because when I first started doing this, as on my own, I mean, I'd always done it, but when I first started making records and stuff, it was very easy because, like, I was one of the first artists to be on MP3, which, if we can even remember MP3.
I remember MP3. I was on MP3. Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Like, it was so easy because there wasn't a lot out there. And over the years, it has gotten so cluttered and so messed up that it is very difficult. But I feel like there does seem to be a bit of a change. And what I notice is the people that are worth finding and are getting some notice, even if it's not massive, are the ones that, you know, they really work their asses off. And yep. the difference now is you have to be so many different things and you have to wear all the hats. And that's hard. That's really hard. And I do see, like, a lot of people manage to get some sort of a team around them. And I think that is key. You know, even if it's just a few people, whether it's a press agent or a tour booker, if that's your weakness, or, you know, whatever it is. But a lot of people have to wear a lot of different hats. And that's kind of, and as a solo artist, that's been particularly difficult because it's a lot of work.
Well, no, I definitely imagine that. Now, I think for the musicians and even the other artists who have some sort of element of needing to do that, I think that even applies to poets in a way, that would you say, I mean, I'm curious to hear what you think, if an artist, when they're kind of right out of the gate, shouldn't hold back getting a team until they have at least gotten to at least have one or two or three really solid singles with videos, with things out there, because when you start getting that attention, you need to have a little bit of depth people can jump into to decide to become your fan, as opposed to, you know, I think one of the tendencies is when you say, I'm going to go for it, you go and you try to get this team around you, then you try to do this record, then you try to put it out, and you want it all to happen right away, but all you have is one song and a barely filled out, you know, social media presence. But what are your thoughts on that? Maybe I'm going at it a different way.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. First of all, you're not going to get anywhere if you haven't done something yourself. It's just not going to happen nowadays.
Agreed, yeah.
The industry doesn't have – there is no more artist development. You know, there's so many artists that we can look at that we – great artists that we would not have today had there not been a record company going, all right, we're going to give them three albums to, you know, have a hit. So you really have to develop yourself on your own, first of all, and then secondly, I don't, you know, I really hate the whole social media influencer culture. It makes me completely mental. But
well, you're in the middle of it too. You're in like the vortex of Instagram influencerville
yeah.
right now.
Yeah. You know, it's just I have zero interest in it, and it probably works against me in some ways. And it's and not to say that I don't promote my stuff, as Cliff knows, I do. But it has to be real and it has to be genuine. But I do think that there's such a glut of stuff out there, and a lot of it not great, that unless you have developed yourself and unless you are doing something on your own, then it's kind of hard to get a team around you. And I do think that if you do have something solid, it gives you more leverage to say, yeah, you know what? That's not going to work for me because I already did it. So why do I need you? But I think that having people who believe in you and, you know, nurture you and stuff like that, I think that's very important, and making good contacts and making good networking. But it's got to be real. Like nobody wants to, or I don't really think anybody really makes it if that connection you make with so and so who runs this particular, you know, music, whatever, if it's not a real connection, it's not gonna. It's just, and I'm not saying that people don't all just want to hustle, because there are people like that, mm-hmm. but I've never noticed any really good large steps forward without making genuine connections. I don't think you walk in a room anymore and go, oh, hey, here's my songs, and everybody jumps up and down and signs you. That's rare.
Right. That's the myth kind of
yeah.
that, especially the music biopic has really yeah. killed that, because they have the thing where, you know, the scene where, well, you mentioned Johnny Cash earlier, so I'm thinking of the movie Walk the Line, where he sits there and he plays, you know, he just play like basically improvises, and his band improvises behind him, and he sings one song, and oh my God. Now, you and I both know what a load of crap that is. Because maybe then no one had ever heard someone strum a guitar like that and sing some very basic rhymes. But Johnny Cash was great. But you want to tell me there weren't other great people who sounded just like Johnny Cash around at that exact same time? You know, well, of course there was.
I think it's, you know, I think like anything, it's the right combination. And
the right people, the right personalities involved. You know, I mean, that's a huge piece.
Yeah. And a lot of hard work. A lot of hard work.
You know, stopping, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and it gets harder. You know, so it can be very discouraging at times. You know, I mean, like I said, I'm pretty much on my own, no matter how many people I've played with over the years or used multiple times. You know, they're out making a living themselves. So, you know, I pretty much have to handle all of that after the album is done.
Absolutely.
The real work begins. So I got to do all that stuff. And, but honestly, I wouldn't have a lot of the things that I've been able to accomplish without the help of friends, whether it be a guitar player or whether it be a video director or whether it be, you know, whatever it is. But those were real relationships that were there first and foremost, and that we sort of grew up together, if you will.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe you could speak to, I mean, I think there's two pieces that I want to kind of separate and try to have you speak about. But first one first, you were talking about once the album's done, then the real work begins. And I think one of the big things that poets, musicians, all kinds of creative people have such a hard time with is you put your heart and soul into something and now it's done. And you wish you could just go, and it's out, and you put it up on social media, and everybody jumps up and down, just like you said, and it's great. Well, that's not how it works, and we know that. So how do you go about thinking about your promotional strategy? How do you gear yourself up for that kind of longer road of promoting this thing once you've spent all this time creating it?
Well, it gets harder and harder every time.
I would imagine this, yeah.
No, I think that I've been lucky because I'm a very visual person. A lot of times I will have a vision in my head of what the album is going to look like and what I want. And then whether the song comes first or the idea comes first, doesn't really matter. They end up meshing together. But there, almost every single time I have actually done the photos and things like that well before the album was finished, because I had a vision in my head and I wanted that vision to, you know, be real, and I wanted to make it real. So, you know, there are two separate things. And I think, you know, that's where I'm very creative. That's where I still stay in the creative realm. But I think that I know enough, you know, having been in the magazine business and stuff, I know enough about that end of it to know what's needed to push it to the next place. And, you know, and I've done a lot of things where, you know, I did the first album out, I did the radio campaign, and, you know, and the first one was great. And I actually, you know, got a great award for that. And, you know, did things I didn't think we could do, but it also became very quickly became apparent, you know, how, no matter how you slice it, payola is never going to go away. And that, you know, I would get calls, oh, you know, can we buy so-and-so a $50 gift card? No, if he doesn't want to play the record, he doesn't want to play the record. You know, I'm like, I'm just not going to do it. So, and then the second radio campaign I did, or second and third, I have to say, and I had to be talked into the third, but the second one I did was just a complete ripoff. And then the third one, I didn't really want to do it all, but I did get some decent interviews out of it. But, you know, I know the areas that I want to hit and the things I can do with my budget and my experience and what's important to me. And, you know, so making videos has become very important to me. And actually, it's a very, I still don't get to do as many as I like. But same thing. I always have a vision, and I know what I want, and I see it in my head, and then I sit down with the director I'm going and tell them what I see. And I literally can give them like a shot for shot. And then I literally sit there and I pre-edit everything. They'll give me all the different cuts, and I will sit there and go, oh, from minute, you know, 1.33 to minute 1.40, I like that what we did there, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of that. And I think a lot right now, a lot of people do, though, they rely so much on social media, which we have to, we don't really have a choice, but, I always say beware of the hype, you know?
No, there's so much of it, is there?
Yeah. Yeah. Like if there's no substance behind it, like, you're never going to get super young people to really kind of not follow hype. That's what, you know, that's their job when they're young. But
yeah. They don't know that it's hype yet. They think it's actually a real thing. Yeah.
You know, and they can get excited about it or whatever. But I think that it's got to have substance. And I, you know, like Cliff was saying earlier, you kind of want something that's going to last.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Second question, I think, too. Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, but really quick to add on to that, I think one thing that that you're saying and Cliff has mentioned as well is that when you're an artist, we got to remember that we have to focus on creating something of value first, because when mm-hmm. we start doing the thing that I think so many people in this world do, and I know you definitely see it in LA, is there are people who are always chasing the new potential way to get in. They think they can get in this way. They think they can get in that way. And that's what a lot of this Instagram influencer thing is too, right? We know that's what this is.
Yeah.
One thing I saw and you know, I have pluses and minuses I could go on to about with Taylor Swift, right? Mm-hmm. But one thing, I saw a video of her earlier today, which was really remarkable. And it was apparently at these larger, her last tour, she would go to these big cities and her kind of top fans that had been in her fan club and whatever for a long time got invited to go record a video to be played on the screens of the stadium to be able to talk to everybody else saying how much, you know, what Taylor's music right. has done for them. Well, that she would come out and talk to them. But the thing that was interesting is there was a girl saying, well, you know, it really helped me feel like I could, you know, finally come out to my family about my orientation and whatever. And Taylor comes up behind her. She goes, yeah, I saw that Tumblr post. You did that like 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And the girl suddenly realizes, wait, Taylor Swift actually knows what I'm putting on social media.
Yeah.
And then you start seeing more people, you know, and I'm sure she checked it before the people came in. I mean, you know, that's what had to happen. There's no way she's going to remember that. But taking the moment for them to sit there and go, where this girl goes, wait, you know my name? She goes, yeah, you're Shannon. Like, just that kind of use of social media on that scale, I find to be really effective. However, when you're chasing it to make it all about you,
yeah,
it doesn't work. Yes, yes.
See, and I see Cliff, he's over here nodding too. I can see
it. Welcome up. Yep.
It's not about, he's always awake. No, I should see the phone calls I get at 2 a.m. No. the thing I was just bringing up is, it's like, I think it all comes back to your intent. Are you creating art that matters, it's going to last? And are you genuinely trying to connect with the audience? Which then leads me into the next part, which I think Cliff really is good at too, which is, when you talked about these friendships, these connections, genuine connections with people, other artists in the industry, how do you think about that? How do you view those relationships in your own life, in your own career? And what do you think the difference is between the really authentic ones that last and the real kind of temporary, just value extraction ones, as far as you see?
Well, you know, it's interesting because to me, they become family, but that it's not always the same on their end. And like any family or any relationship, you know, they can really break your heart when, you know, and when you do something creative like music or like writing, anything like that, you're really putting it out there, and you really want to be with people you trust. And sometimes it's not necessarily that they have intentionally, you know, wounded you in some way. It's just, they're just doing their thing and they need to move to something else. I think that, I mean, I think we all know when something is a genuine relationship, or something is just, oh, hi, you know, I see this person at all these events. And, you know, you do tend to gravitate towards each other. And, first and foremost, you know, I have to really dig your stuff And then if that's cool and we start talking and you're an actual person and, you know, we have similar senses of humor or we have similar, you know, ideas or whatever it may be, you know, then it's real and you can pursue it. But I don't think, I think especially in certain kinds of music, there's a lot of disingenuous meeting and hyping and, you know, stuff like that. And I there's a lot of, you know, God bless when those people get somewhere. And, you know, I may never, but I think at the end of the day, I have to live with what I do and be happy with what I've created, even if it never, you know, never sells a million copies. That's not really my goal. I mean, I love to sing and that's what I want to do. And I particularly love to create records. So, you know, that's my intent and that's what I try to do. But I think that, like I said, I think it depends on the person. You know, a lot of my relationships and people I've worked with for, you know, over 20 years. And new people have come in as we've gone along. And some people have had, you know, changes and they move on to something else. And that's just very natural and real. And, you know, that's how it is. But I've also had people who are like, boy, they just, you know, that whole big flash. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, this was like, what happened? And you're like, I can't be around this.
Yeah.
And you're full of crap and I can't do this. So.
And I think there's probably just slightly less people full of crap in the poetry and publishing world than there is in the music world.
Oh no.
But just slightly yes. You think so?
The whole time I hear Divi talking, I'm like, oh my God, she is so right. In the industry, I think in the creative world, I've tried a dozen times to put it in a way that doesn't sound melodramatic, but being an artist, I don't think that's possible. But I know that there's where people take it seriously and people love doing it. I truly believe that those people are going to have good things happen in their career. There are more folks, in my opinion, who want that facade. They want to live that lifestyle. And so they try to sponge off those who love what they do, because the rub is they desperately want to create what creators do, and they hate creators because it seems so, quotation fingers, easy for creators when it's not. Like Debbie said way back at the beginning, it's hard work. It's hard work when to create the album. It's hard work to get it, you know, produced and put it, you know, actually get it out there. And then you don't even get to take a breath before you've got to then promote the album, because with books and with music, I have seen folks that get their first book or that first album and go, all right, where's my $1 million? And it's like, now again, it's a tremendous honor to have a publisher come and contract with you. It's a tremendous honor to hold that CD that you created with your songs on it. But like what the show pinpoints or, you know, really focuses is the business aspect of it. And Debbie, that what I wish, again, no one that I cared about would have to deal with this stuff. But the fact that, you know, I can hear in your voice, it's not haggard or worn out. It's just there. And it's not that people think that, oh, your dreamy eyes are gone. Like, no, I think that you have to go through that loss of innocence in order to really make a mark in art, because that loss of innocence is not a loss of your creative spirit. It just, in my experience, it's helped me fine tune what I want, what I will not endure, what I will accept, and who I will let into my inner circle, you know. Because what it sounds like to me, Debbie, is that you've had these folks that have been there for you, and then, you know, you've had, because I've done this, maybe I'm projecting, but then you let some new folks come in and have to learn quick to spot a sponge faster.
I'm just giving my observations. I think, honestly, for me, I've made serious mistakes by not taking more chances with someone I might not know that well, because I needed a certain security level. You know, I mean, as creative people or just people, we all need a certain comfort level, and whatever that may be. And I am always amazed by some of the guys that I know and how fearless they are and what they've done, and guys and gals, I want to say gals too, that, you know, what they've created, and I'm just, you know, sometimes they're like, they're my hero. I'm like, oh my God, how did they do that? But, you know, it always comes back to hard work. And I think it's interesting because one of the things that, you know, speaking of the business side, I think because I was doing this so early in that whole transition of when you could do it yourself, and I learned a lot of stuff and I did it myself, somewhere along the way here, I became the person like, oh, go ask Debbie, she knows. Go ask Debbie, she knows. You know, and so, you know, I do have that whole business side and how it works and how you get paid and, you know, yada yada, contracts and whatever the thing is. And sometimes I get stuck over there, and it's very difficult for me to make that transition back into being creative. I find that harder for me than going the other way. I can slip into the business side in a heartbeat, but slipping back in the creative side and going, oh yeah, right, that's, you know, getting comfortable in that again, that can sometimes trip me up a bit. And that's my personal struggle is that. And I think that, you know, you get to a certain age, you know who's full crap and who's not. But I think that even I could have done better and been farther along or whatever you want to call it, had I taken more chances and gotten in more rooms with people I didn't know. But it's just so uncomfortable for me.
Well, I think it's uncomfortable for a lot of people. But yeah. Well, I think one thing, you know, Cliff said that I want to commend you on is he said, you know, people might say, well, the dreamy look in your eyes basically has kind of vanished. But the thing that I see that I love is that, you know, lots of people have the dream of going and being a singer or a musician. Mm-hmm. And then they start that initial thing and they, you know, they get their asses kicked a few times. And most of them just pack up and go home or just kind of give up. The fact that you've been through stuff and you're still there making the art, you're still there doing it, you're still doing the things you want to do. And that to me is kind of what gives power to the person who is a creative person. For me, I've told people when I meet elderly people who have been artists, who have lived their lives as artists, there is a gravitas that comes with that versus the kind of person who's, you can tell, has just kind of been destroyed by life bit by bit their entire life. You see an artist who, they've gone through stuff too, and they have their own stuff, but they've also fought back and created things, and there's a refinement to that spirit. And so I commend you for continually, you know, continuing to do that kind of work. And I think that's kind of a path that we're on. I think one thing I want to ask, and then I'm going to turn it back over to you to kind of Cliff to kind of do a little bit more with. But the thing I would like to kind of ask is, you know, there's probably a lot of people who are listening to this who either create music or wanting to create music and wanting to perform live and do all that, and are probably a little bit before you in their career. So it's not necessarily like they're all 16 and wondering if they should go to LA or not. Right. But what would you, if you had to like impart a piece of advice to them or just send like a paragraph to them or something to kind of give them your best kind of piece of advice, what would you say to those people who might be listening?
I think particularly if you're a singer, and this is where I look back and go, wow, you really screwed up, is as a singer, to make sure that you can play one other instrument almost as well as you sing. You know, I mean, I play a little guitar, I play, you know, a little bit of piano, but it doesn't even remotely come close to what I do singing, because that's what I always focused on. And now I can see how I would have made a better living had I been better at that. And you know, if that doesn't interest them, but engineering does, great, then do that. Or if that, you know, if there's something else in music that really interests you. But I think as a pure musician, you got to have two instruments under your belt, whether it be your voice and a guitar or, you know, whatever that is. It's really tough to make a living if you don't have that. And I think that you can do so much more, and it gives you such a better understanding of music itself and of creating, you know, and that's why I still continue. I mean, I still plunk away at that guitar, and you know, it's like one of these days I'll be able to. But it's, but you know, I know enough to know what I need to know. I just wish I could play better. But I think that would be one thing, and also, you know, to really take a minute and understand the business and how you're paid, and understand that you're going to get 50 different answers, unfortunately. But songwriting in particular is the single most regulated industry in the U.S. We're more regulated than guns. And, you know, we fall under the Department of Justice, and, you know, what we can make is set at a certain level and yada, yada, yada. And so there are a lot of things people, oh, I'm going to make $1 million. No, you're not. You're going to make 0.01.
You say $1 million and I just instantly start laughing. That should right there be a communication to anybody listening to this.
Exactly. I mean, I think be focused, you know, God, you know, I know that, you know, as an artist, it's particularly difficult to be focused. I mean, but if you have one thing that you really want to do, that's great. But just make sure you have a couple other tools in your arsenal. And I think, you know, you were talking about how people sort of drop off and whatever. And I've seen, especially being in Hollywood, boy, I can't tell you the number of actors and actresses I have seen just walk away and walk away young. But, you know, for me, like I said it earlier, it's not, I can't not do this. And I know it's very bad English, and I know that Cliff hates that, but that's the only saying that I've ever been able to, like, really make people understand. It's not something that, it's something that I have to do. Whether I'm successful or whether I'm not successful, no matter what happens, I have to sing. It's just who I am. And it can be frustrating, and it can be like, gosh, you know, when am I going to find my place? You know, and then you think you found your place, because I really thought I'd found my place with the No Longer Broken album. And I thought, you know, I'd really, and I still think that we did something really special there. But then things got off track, and it's been a real struggle for me to get back on. And now, you know, we've just released True Me, and it's different. You know, it's a whole different situation, and it is a little harder this time to get really hyped about it and really get yourself up and you know, keep going. And I just have to find different ways that work for me. And I think you have to constantly be doing that.
I agree with you on that. I mean, I jokingly tell people, and it's the truth. I mean, I've quit music like 10 times in my life, you know, and it's because I was like, I'm done with this. What am I even doing? This seems so self-indulgent. This seems, you know, but you always come back to it. You suddenly realize there's something about it. It's like poetry too. It's just something about how you're made, something about how you see the world. And yeah.
I think, you know, I mean, maybe I'm being especially hard on myself lately, but I just lately have been really seeing, oh God, you know, if you had just sort of done this instead, or if you'd, you know, and I get it, you can't just sit there and do that. But now it's a matter of, okay, what can I do moving forward to make sure I have enough of this in my life, enough
exactly. Need
to be happy and to, no matter what happens or where it goes or doesn't go, I mean, you know, as a commercial artist, I want it to go somewhere. So don't get me wrong. I'm not going to like sit around on a tree somewhere and sing to myself. That's not going to happen. But you have to sort of balance it and know that when you do something, whether the world buys it or not, that you did the very best you could and you put out the best, I'm going to call it product for lack of a better word, but you put out the best record, or you put out the best song, or the best book, or the best poem. Whatever it is, if you're happy with it and you know you did your best, I think that's – you have to kind of keep reminding yourself, hey, this is where I'm at.
Debbie, it sounds to me like you need to start thinking about managing some younger artists.
It's so funny. People say that all the time, and I'm like – and actually it's funny. The whole thing of helping other artists kind of grew into a little side business over the last couple of years because –
good for you. Yeah.
Yeah, because people kept, you know, I enjoy helping other people, and especially with music and understanding it, because I could see such a disconnect. And so, like I said, a lot of people will go, oh, can you read this over for me? And what does it mean? And blah, blah, blah. And it did kind of grow into its own little side thing, because people, a lot of people don't have their catalog together. Like, especially in music, you have to have it registered in certain places to get certain pennies. And so, and, mm-hmm. and it, you know, it really is, unfortunately, a business of pennies, but it has always been a business of pennies because it's based on publishing. Unless you are, you know, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or whatever, unless you're selling out massive arenas for many, many years and taking that money and being careful with it, even then, you know, putting on a tour costs a lot of money. So I think that the when it comes down to royalties, making sure you are registered properly, or I've had people who I've helped that they thought they owned half a song and whoever registered it didn't include them. And it's like, yeah, you're not getting anything. It's just, it's horrible. And these are big dudes who like know what they're doing. So it happens to everyone. And so, like I said, yeah, it kind of grew into a little side thing. And I don't know, you know, I'll answer anyone's questions. Like I'll help anyone that I can if they're legitimate and they in their sincerity to actually learn.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Debbie, thank you for answering those questions. Cliff, I'll kick it back to you because we've been talking a bit now, but I really appreciate that. And we're going to have to do a follow-up episode another time here. I'm sure we can talk about so much more.
That's what I'm saying, because I have so much written down. Like, and I just know that like, but this is going to be a 7-hour show. I'm serious. No, this is what I mean, Debbie. I'm not trying to. I don't flatter because I think flattery is the nicest way to lie. So you're just going to take this compliment, damn it. The fact that you know, on MySpace, oh my God, it's like a time capsule. There's a reason, like, the music I heard then is different than now, but it's just how you've grown. It's how you've grown and the layers of it, you know? And I think that artists as a whole kick the crap out of ourselves. But I think that's what, if we lose that, or if we have a concert or a reading and we don't have butterflies in our stomach, I think we lose our edge.
Yeah.
And I want people to know more about you, and I want them to hear your music. Where, how can they get in touch with you for questions if you want to open that door? Because I really think that you could do marvelous things there as well. How can they contact you, and what music do you have out there? What albums or what do you have coming out?
Well, I mean, anyone can just go to DebbieHennessy.com, and it's all there. And all the videos, all the music, all the links you need and all that. And then actually the little business I started, it's on the links page, and it's just called entertainmenteditorial.com. And, you know, they can shoot me a note there, or they can shoot me a note on my website. It's you know, wherever they want to. I think one of those places is great. And, you know, it's all my music is where it's supposed to be as far as iTunes and, you know, Spotify, even though we're mad at them and, you know, other places. Yeah. You know, it's funny. The only place, I think I pissed somebody off at Pandora, though, because they will not put my music on there. So I'm keep going, everybody keep asking for it there. Let's bug them. But you know, who cares? Like, whatever. It's one place. But, yeah, iTunes and now iTunes Music is good. And, you know, I still sell CDs. You know, my audience is very wide, age-wise, and it's split pretty evenly male-female, which is really cool. And people still want a CD, and so I still offer that. You know, I absolutely offer it, and they can get those either on my site or through CD Baby, who is my distributor. Like I said, the True Me single is out, and you know, that's actually an example of where I tried something different, which I do a lot, and people go, you're weird. But I was seeing a lot of people creating instrumental playlists, And as a singer, I was being cut out of that. And the music that my guys do, my gals and guys do, can stand on its own. It's amazing. And it's complete. You don't feel like something's missing when you listen to it. So I thought, you know what? Let's try it. Let's make it this little two-song single, if you will, A side, B side, with, you know, my full version with me singing and then just the instrumental version. And it's kind of cool. And I'm actually thinking of going back and re-releasing No Longer Broken with that kind of a thing in mind, and maybe some live tracks that we've done, things like that, to really make it special. But so, yeah. And then I have some cool, I just released a video last fall that for Whiskey Charm, which is off the No Longer Broken CD. I think, you know, that's the thing too, as an independent, you have more, even though you feel like time's really slipping by fast, you do have more time to sort of pull from your so as when it's music anyway, you have more time to pull from your album and, okay, yeah, I didn't get that. You know, I put out a video 1 year after, but then I put out another video 2 years after. But it's still new. I mean, it's still, you know, that the music still holds up and the video's fresh and it's new and it's the vision that I had and it was something that I had to do because that's what I wanted to create. So I don't know if we're going to do a video for True Me, but it might just be a lyric video. But so that's that. And then I have shows every once in a while. I'm having a show a couple weeks here in Los Angeles at a new, well, it's not a new club, but it's new for me. And it's recently beautifully redone, all new sound system, new stage, new lighting. And so it's going to be a blast. And I got a lot of special people coming down. So it's going to be cool.
Hey, everyone. It's Michael. I'm taking a break in the interview segment right now. I want to play you another song by Debbie. This is Whiskey Charm.
Well, Debbie, I cannot thank you enough for coming on this show. And like I said, this will be done again. So what I'd love you to do is, I know we're going to talk, we're going to speak, but allow us to know when you have albums coming out or when you have songs that are going to be debuting. We can plug those, you know, as we go through with other shows, because the point of all this is not to rub elbows, but to show how networking and professionalism actually pays off. And you have been a quintessential part of this machine for us. And I can't thank you enough.
Oh, I thank you guys. I have loved what you've done. You're one of my heroes when it comes to, wow, went from not having anything published to publishing and, you know, award winning, and then creating the magazine and the radio show and the gaming, you know, it's so impressive and so amazing. And I'm just lucky you still talk to me. So
you can stop that mess right now. No, seriously. I do believe, and I mean, I'll kind of touch back on this, that when you do the right work with the right people for the right reasons, miracles happen. I truly believe that. And again, it's not the tennis ball back, the compliment, but same with Amadei. You know, I've known this fool for a long time too. And if you told me a year ago, even 6 months that this would be happening, and then we'd have the trifecta of you involved too, I would have laughed. Because, I mean, when you get over, I think to put a bow on it is, you know, I don't want anybody, like I said, I care about the struggle, because, you know, I care about them. You don't want that kind of thing to happen. But what I remind myself before I go, aw, is like, no, I've gone through some of the same things. Yep. And when you're going through it and people say like, oh, you'll get stronger because of this, you're like, you can go to hell. Yeah. I don't care what you think about this. It sucks. It's right. It's, again, this is another one of those cliches that's absolutely true. And I think that in my own career, there have been points that I sit there and go, oh my God, what have I done? What if? And then I get that, you know, I'll walk it off and I'll get out of that and realize that it's, I think there are cathartic times in our career lifestyles to say that everybody has in every vocation to say like, am I doing the right thing? And I definitely know that you are, Debbie. And thank you for continuing to do it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And I do think, you know, one other thing I would say is, and I struggle with it every day, is my speed and my path is not the same as everyone else. And I'm, you know, I cannot expect to be and do what other people do because, you know, they may seem to me to be quote unquote farther along, but it's, you know, it's a different path. And so I think we have to stick to our path and, you know, make the best of it and keep striving to get to whatever our real goal is with our heart, you know, where we really want to be.
Both Cliff and I want to say thank you for spending your time with us. I just want to say thank you to Debbie Hennessy for the great interview. You can find her at debbiehennessy.com.
You can find Cliff Brooks at cliffbrooks.com. Also, southerncollectiveexperience.com. You can find me at michaelamadei.com or worldpoetryopenmic.net. The music for this episode was provided by the fantastic Justin Johnson. You can find him at justinjohnsonlive.com. The goal of this podcast is to give you ideas and tactics that you can apply to your own creative life. Until next time, remember to be courageous, do the hard work, conquer your obstacles creatively, learn to trust your heart, for it's easy to lose your path in this business of music and poetry.